Hey, welcome back to Haunted Haze. I'm Josh.
I'm Kristen.
And this is episode 42.
Yep, and it is a good morning.
Oh yeah, I'm feeling haunted and hazed today.
Yeah, we are, normally we do these episodes at night, but...
Yeah, we're doing it this morning because we were up late last night watching the new Halloween movie.
Yeah, so we're having mimosas. And
we're drinking mimosas.
My mimosa is sending me messages also. There's like little letters appearing on the side of the glass, so that's crazy.
Yeah, so you're feeling a little haunted haze today too, huh?
For sure.
Well, yeah, so like we were saying, we went and saw the new Halloween movie, and I'm sorry, guys. I was really disappointed.
Yeah, we were really, really looking forward to it, and we were like, we're going to go see it in theaters. We know we can watch it at home. Like,
yeah, it's just, I don't know, really disappointed. That's all. I don't want to give any spoilers away or anything like that, but if you liked it, you know, good on you, but it just... was not what I was anticipating.
If you did like it, we would love to hear from you and know, what about it made you like it? Because to me, it was very disappointing if you're a fan of Michael Myers.
Absolutely. I feel like it was...
We don't want to give anything away, but it's just, it's hard to talk about without spoiling anything. But I definitely, we've seen a lot of horror movies lately and new horror movies. We've gone to the theater and seen several.
Oh, yeah. We went and saw Terrifier 2, and that one was...
Oh.
That was a far better movie.
It really was, and who would have ever thought that I would think that Terrifier 2 was going to be a better movie than Halloween Ends?
Right?
Like, it's just... Terrifier 2 had a better storyline.
Yeah, so that was gonna be our Saturday Splatter Day movie, right? Slasher Saturday movie was the new Halloween movie, but I don't know if I even want to... promote that one, is that?
I think we still have to.
Right? All right, so that's what we went and did Saturday for Splatter Day.
Yeah, and it was a little disappointing.
I hope that everyone's been keeping up with the movies that we've been watching. I know we did it a little different this week as far as...
Oh, yeah, we didn't pick them in advance.
Right, which I kind of like. I like the spontaneity. What do you want to watch tonight?
Yeah, it is fun, but I like to share them in advance so that if you guys want to watch one, like the night we do... Then it's just, we can do that together. I know, it's like
we watch it together, but far away.
Yeah. All right, so let's go through the movies from this week.
All right, let's do it. Let's have a little recap of what we did watch.
All right, Monster Monday, we went with Feast.
Yeah. Kristen, I was trying to watch movies that Kristen's never really seen this week.
Oh, yeah, and I've only seen two of these ahead of time. So, for Terrifying Tuesday, we did Terrifier 1 and 2.
Yes.
All right, Wednesday, Werewolf Wednesday, my favorite werewolf movie, Silver Bullet.
Oh, yeah, a great werewolf movie,
so Silver good.
Bullet. All right. I think Kristen just had to watch that because it was too much. She needed a good comfort food movie.
Exactly. And then for Bloodthirst Thursday, we went with Suck.
Oh, yeah, the comedy horror movie, Suck.
Yeah, that was another new one for me, too. I had never seen before.
Yeah, I love that movie. It's about a band. They all become vampires. If you've never seen it, it's a good hidden gem.
All right, Frightening Friday, we went with Night of the Living Dead.
The remake.
Yes.
The Tom Savini remake of Night of the Living Dead, which is one of my favorite horror movies, actually.
Yeah, that's such a good one. And then for Slasher Saturday, as we said, we went to see Halloween Ends.
Yeah.
All right.
On to the next.
And then Supernatural Sunday, we have Grave Encounters.
Yeah, Chris has never seen it, so.
Yeah, I'm excited. I can't wait to watch it.
So anyway, well, we hope you enjoyed those movies. Maybe you've seen some of those movies. Maybe you haven't. If you haven't, definitely check them out.
And tell us what you think about Halloween Ends whenever you do see it.
Yeah,
we would
as
love
always,
to hear. Hit us up on our Gmail at...
HauntedHazePodcast@gmail.com.
Yep, and then you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, follow us on social medias there. We'd love to hear from you. We appreciate everyone with the likes, following our pages. You know, it makes it all worthwhile. It's fun. I love sharing like funny memes, like horror memes, and
getting
people's reaction from them. And it's been awesome. We've really been appreciative of it.
Yeah, it's been super fun being back. And I just love Halloween so much.
Oh, yeah.
And this just gives me such the October Halloween vibes.
Which is also another thing. I would love to shout out Wicked Ways Haunted House.
Oh, yeah, in Memphis.
In Memphis, because I won one of their contests
and
got some free tickets to their haunted house. And they have a very awesome haunted house.
Yeah, it's legit. It's so cool. Yeah, we're so excited.
I think it's just a family that runs it. Like, they opened it and operate it. It's just one family.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's very, like, kind of mom and pop.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, they don't have, like, a lot of corporation backing.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, definitely shout out to them for the free tickets.
Yeah, we're so excited.
Yeah, we're so excited. We've been there before, and it's a really good one. It's a good haunted house. Yeah. There's a lot of detail in it, a lot of gore and gruesome.
It also feels kind of long, too. Like, you're in it for a while.
Yeah, it's a good long.
Yeah.
It's a lot of turns and corners, and they pretty much put something at every corner to scare you.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And they're constantly renovating themselves and adding new things. I know we got tickets to go do the VR experience.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited about that.
And
that's going to be a little scary.
Escape room.
Escape room, yeah. Those always a little stress me out, too. So, I mean, I don't know if we've done, like, some little scary escape rooms before, but I imagine this one will be a little more scary.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So, shout out to Wicked Ways. We really appreciate it. Everyone in Memphis, go check them out.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so like we said, we were going to keep all the stories true, you know, horrifying stories, right? Like, true events. And a lot of these stories that we're going to talk about today are actually what inspired some of our favorite horror movies.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm definitely looking forward to this. All right, you know what time it is. It's time to dig deep into these scary stories. And like we said before, we're trying to match stories that are true, real stories that have also inspired horror movies.
Yeah, the worst kind of horror movies.
Yeah, based on a true story.
Hate it immediately. Yeah.
What's scarier than real life?
Right. Especially when you live in Memphis.
Well, we got some pretty scary stories tonight, right? And tonight I want to start off with my favorite, extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good alien movies out there.
Oh, for sure. This one in particular is what inspired Gremlins and E.T.
Okay.
It's a pretty famous extraterrestrial encounter, the 1955 Kelly-Hopkinsville encounter. A lot of people have probably heard of this if you're into UFOs and aliens. But if you haven't, it's rather strange. So on August 21st, 1955, the Kelly-Hopkinsville UFO incident terrified the people of Western Kentucky and introduced the world to what we call Little Green Men. Around 11 p.m., eight people showed up at the Hopkinsville, Kentucky police station in a state of panic. "We need help," one gasped. "We've been fighting them for nearly 4 hours." Fighting who? Apparently little silver men. To some, the Kelly-Hopkinsville encounter provides compelling evidence of alien contact. Others see it as an overreaction, perhaps fueled by moonshine or an owl attack.
Well, I never drank no kind of alcohol that made me see little green men.
That's true. I don't know. Maybe you can have
maybe some. Solid blackness.
So, yeah, I've seen some black. The man passed out. What's certain is that the intrigue around the event has lingered. Today, the 300-odd citizens of nearby Kelly, Kentucky, throw an annual Little Green Men Day festival every August.
Okay, well, I'd love that.
The trope of aliens as Little Green Men comes from the incident. And even Steven Spielberg drew inspiration for the encounter as he made E.T.
I love that because, like, we have both done some paintings and art with Little Green Men aliens.
Oh, absolutely. I love aliens.
Yeah.
Most of my paintings are
alien themed.
UFO
or alien.
Yeah. So the tale of the Kelly-Hopkinsville incident starts innocently enough. While visiting a friend named Elmer Lucky Sutton at his farmhouse in the tiny town of Kelly on August 21st, 1955, Billy Ray Taylor of Pennsylvania went outside to the well to collect some water. Then something streaking across the sky caught his attention. Taylor later described the silvery object as real bright and with an exhaust of all the colors of the rainbow.
Well, that's dope.
Panicked, he fled indoors and told the others, which included his wife and the Sutton family, that he had just seen a UFO. Taylor also recalled that he hadn't heard an explosion, just a hissing noise as the object landed somewhere behind the farmhouse. But no one took Taylor seriously until the dogs began to bark. Someone or something was approaching the house.
Oh, shit.
The terrified group later described to the police what they saw in vivid, frightening terms. The invaders had round, oversized heads and long arms with talons that nearly touched the ground. Talons? That's scary.
That is scary.
Everything about them seemed to shimmer and glow in the darkness.
Well, I love that.
Their eyes had yellowish light, and their bodies glinted like they were made of silvery metal.
Sounds like their eyes sound like they have a liver condition.
And they were getting closer. But those gathered at the Sutton farmhouse weren't going to go down without a fight. Sutton Taylor grabbed their guns. When one of the creatures pressed its face against the window, they started to fire. Over the next few hours, the aliens drew close and then retreated. They flipped up into the trees when the humans tried to shoot them.
They were like, "What the F is this?
Fuck this." One reached down and grabbed Taylor's hair. Finally, when all seemed quiet, several people piled into a car and fled into the town to beg the police for help. Four city police, including the chief of police, Russell Greenwell, drove out to the Sutton farmhouse to see what had happened. Aliens or not, the crowd at the police station had seemed genuinely terrified. One man had a pulse of 140 beats per minute. Damn. These aren't the kind of people who normally run to the police for help, Greenwell noted. But the police didn't find any obvious evidence of Little Silver Men. As noted in the Kentucky New Era, the next day, nothing stirred during the investigation, besides one of the officers accidentally stepping on a cat's tail in the darkness outside the house. No further excitement ensued. However, at least one Kentucky police officer believed Taylor and Sutton's story, Sergeant Frank Duddis. He was not among the officers who had visited the Sutton farmhouse, but he had his own alien encounters. The summer before, Duddis and another officer reported seeing three flying saucers. "I think the whole story is entirely plausible," Duddis told the Kentucky New Era. "I know I saw the saucers. If I saw them, the Kelly story could certainly be true." According to that same article, other officers were reluctant to give their opinion. So what could possibly explain what the Suttons and Taylors and others had seen?
Right. That's what I want to know.
So the validity of the Kelly-Hopkinsville encounter was questioned immediately. Some people doubted the honesty of the Suttons, and neighbors dismissed the whole affair as a drunken debacle and the result of too much shine. "These lies they told about us," Lenny Langford, Sutton's mother, who was also present during the incident. "They said we were drinking, but Langford knew what she had seen. The aliens looked like a 5-gallon gasoline can with a head on top and small legs. It was a shimmering bright metal like on my refrigerator." Even the police who responded to the scene agreed that it didn't appear that anyone had been drinking. But when the Sutton family tried to profit off the interest of the story by charging admission to the farmhouse, any remaining goodwill towards them all but vanished. Neighbors grew cold and threatening 10 days later, and the Suttons left Kelly for good. So if it wasn't the Suttons making it up, and it was real aliens, what is it if it's not aliens?
Right.
So one explanation does involve a creature from the sky. An owl. Great horned owls have long wings, glowing eyes, and round heads. Could the people of Sutton farmhouse have mistaken this owl for the alien in the darkness?
Owls can be really big.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, if you saw an owl sitting on the ground, standing up, I mean, it might.
Have you ever seen that, like, I guess it's like a video, maybe like a TikTok video, but they like look in the attic, and it's like these like alien looking creatures, but they're birds.
Yes.
They're like not baby owls, but they're like not fully developed owls. You know what I'm saying?
Adolescent.
Yeah, they're like adolescent owls, and they look like aliens.
I have seen that video, but that's a good point, actually.
Yeah, I mean, like, I totally believe in aliens. Just gonna put that out there, but
maybe this
not
wasn't
everything's a fucking alien,
right?
But this seems like pretty legit. I mean, you know. She saw a little fat gasoline man.
Also, when I think of owls, I think of The Staircase. If you haven't watched The Staircase, you should watch that and think of it as an owl attacker.
Oh, that's true.
They don't propose that theory at all on the documentary, however.
So more than 50 years after the Kelly-Hopkinsville encounter, the truth about what happened is more elusive than ever. But what hasn't stopped people from wondering and celebrating what might have happened on that hot August night. The incident and its ensuing coverage helped to solidify the idea of aliens as little green men in popular culture. Although the Taylor and the Suttons described the aliens as little silver men, newspapers ran with little green men instead. That might be because the idea of green aliens had been around since the 1920s, with the birth of science fiction. So they were just trying to get people to connect it with what they already thought it looked like.
But that makes more sense when you know what grays are.
That's true too, like gray, silver. There are those who still don't think the incident was science fiction, however. There are millions of stars and planets in the universe. Geraldine Sutton, the daughter of Lucky Sutton, I couldn't possibly believe ours is the only planet with life.
That's exactly how I feel about it.
Fair. Today, she is determined that the world hears her family side of the story. The remaining survivors of the encounter refuse to talk about the incident, so she does it for them. So the annual festival in Kelly every year draws thousands of people, and the story remains enticing to the producers looking for the next big thing. For example, Steven Spielberg's classic film E.T. was supposedly has its origins on this encounter.
All right.
Other films that have possibly take inspiration from this story are Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Signs, Gremlins, Critters, and possibly even Poltergeist.
Huh, that's interesting. I mean, whenever you think of alien movies, some of those, I mean, Signs is and Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah.
And the movie Fourth Kind. Those are movies to me that jump out as alien movies, like the alien movies.
Right.
Especially Signs.
Signs is...
That movie really messed with me as a child.
That one's pretty scary. The Fourth Kind is pretty scary, too.
Yeah.
That's another based on true story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Fourth Kind's, that one really got me because I didn't really know what to expect with that one.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Yeah.
But then you find out.
Aliens?
Now that I know more about aliens, you know, I know more about like each, the First Kind, Second Kind, Third Kind, Fourth Kind.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't know what that meant at first, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, the idea with aliens is just, you know, it's the unknown. We don't know, like, are they here for good? Are they here because they like us? Are they, like, doing the abductions and, like, experimenting on us?
It's possible.
Like, that's what's fucking scary, you know, is the abduction. That's the scariest thing about aliens.
That is definitely the scariest.
And then, you know, we have to watch Fire in the Sky, the Travis Walton story, which
is another
based on a true story. It just, what he says happened is so terrifying.
Oh, God.
This is terrifying. All right, so let's move on from aliens.
Oh, yeah, I have a good one for us. It's not aliens, but it's in the horror genre.
Well, always, right?
So, a lot of people know...
more true crime.
I'm a late bloomer when it comes to horror movies.
Late bloomer?
Yeah, when it comes to horror movies,
now
I was...
a late bloomer to horror.
Well, as a child, I was very scared of it. So, one of the movies that I've seen in the last, like, 2 years that I love is Scream.
Oh, yeah.
Scream's Ghostface is, like, become one of my favorites.
Scary
out of the slasher group. Yeah. Like, Ghostface is, like, really up there with Michael Myers and Jason to me now.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm loving Ghostface. So, this is what supposedly... it's not a true story being based off a movie. Or it's not a movie being based off a true story. It's right. more like a movie inspiring
a true story.
A true story.
Ooh, interesting.
In 2006, two Idaho teens murdered 16-year-old Cassie Jo Stoddard, claiming the movie Scream inspired them to kill their friend.
Wow.
Brian Draper and Tori Adamkick, both age 16, attended Potatello High School with Cassie Jo. The teen boys entered the premises where Cassie Jo was house-sitting and reportedly stabbed her approximately 30 times.
Damn.
Investigators discovered that Draper and Adamkick had recorded a video of their plan to murder Cassie Jo, as the teens boasted a passion for cinematography and movies. Historically, court cases linked films to murder and mass shootings. At the trial, Adamkick alleged the popular 1996 slasher flick cemented their idea to kill somebody.
Wow. Cemented, like, those, like, once I saw that, I was ready
to, I knew I wanted to I kill somebody.
I
knew
I was
going to
kill that bitch. I just...
While there are accounts of teens who kill their friends, the motives of such murders vary. Often, there is no apparent reason that these killer teens turned on a friend. While there are other accounts for teens who kill their friends, the motives of such murders vary. Draper and Adamkick killed Cassie Jo to obtain fame and notoriety.
Wow.
In a 2007, Idaho state jury convicted both teens of first-degree murder and sentenced them to life in prison.
What the fuck? Just so they could be famous.
Right. Prior to killing Cassie Jo, the seniors Brian and Tori filmed themselves discussing the murder. Portions of the video exist online still.
Oh, wow.
And there's videos that Adam Six saying that there should be no law against killing people. And he mentions how he's horny just thinking about Cassie Jo.
Wow.
The teens reportedly likened themselves to Ted Bundy, the Zodiac Killer, the Hillside Strangler. Draper and Adamkick proclaimed a passion to film and produced multiple incriminating videos regarding the murder of Cassie Jo. In 2017, the Supreme Court released the transcript of the videos.
Wow.
On the night of September 22, 2006, Cassie Jo was house-sitting for her aunt and uncle in their Whispering Hills home. Two of Cassie Jo's friends, Draper and Adamkick, showed up to hang out with her and her boyfriend, Matt Beckham. Reportedly, they all started watching a movie before Draper and Adamkick said that they would rather watch a movie at the theater. The teens acted as though they had left, and shortly after, the house's power went out. When Beckham left for the evening, unable to spend the night, Draper and Adamkick returned. Adamkick allegedly told the police that he and Draper stopped at the house for a party that didn't happen and immediately left to go to a movie theater. During the interview, Adamkick was unable to identify what movie they allegedly went to see the night of the murder.
Wow.
After her boyfriend...
How do you not remember that?
Right. After her boyfriend left, Draper and Adamkick re-entered the home wearing masks and turned off the power again.
That's like The Strangers.
That's, again, one of my worst scary movies. Reportedly, the two killers planned to wait in the basement for Cassie Jo, hoping she would inadvertently play into their slasher movie fantasy and walk downstairs to check the breaker box. When Cassie Jo did not enter the basement, the duo went upstairs to the living room and stabbed her 30 times with two knives. The autopsy later showed that approximately 12 of the stab wounds were fatal, 11 of which came from one knife. So I feel like that means one of the guys was definitely more the murderer.
Right.
After the murder, Draper and Adamkick left the Whispering Hills residence and continued to film their reactions as they drove away.
What the hell?
According to the transcripts of the tapes, shortly after the murder, they went to purchase movie tickets in order to build an alibi. During their police interviews, the teens maintained that they had returned to Adamkick's house at approximately 11:30 p.m. and did not leave. Witnesses later contradicted their claim as well as the timestamp on their video. The teens had recorded themselves after the murder, and Adamkick and Draper exchanged a brief recap of events at 11:31 p.m. Draper said, "We just killed Cassie. We left her in the house. This is not a fucking joke." Adam Kick, "I'm shaking." Draper, "I stabbed her in the throat and I saw her lifeless body. It just disappeared, dude. I killed Cassie."
Jesus Christ.
On Sunday, September 24th, 2006, the family returned home. Cassie Joe's 13-year-old cousin was the first person to find her body. During the investigation, authorities relocated the whole family, the mom, the dad, and the three children that lived there. The police spoke with Draper and Adam Kick after interviewing Beckham, who told authorities that the two teens had been present at the residence the night of the murder. 3 days later, they arrested Draper and Adam Kick.
Wow. What a bunch of dumbasses, too.
Right. The police interviewed them, and after the discovery of Cassie Joe's murder, authorities entered Draper for a second time in 2 days. With consent, investigators searched his room and found an empty knife sheath. The next day, a third interview. Draper alleged that he and Adam Kick returned to the residence to scare Cassie Joe, but Adam Kick stabbed her to death. Draper then led police to the clothes, the weapons, and the mask linked to the murder. What's crazy is Draper's the one who said, "I stabbed her in the throat and I saw her lifeless body."
Yeah.
He's the one that said, "We just killed Cassie." By Thursday, September 28th, authorities arrested Draper and Adam Kick. Draper maintained that Adam Kick coerced him into stabbing Cassie, but the evidence contradicted the alleged innocence of the murder. Investigators could not ascertain Draper and Adam Kick's motive for the killing. The prosecutor pointed towards the conversation from the video that the killers recorded leading up to the murder. On September 21st, Draper and Adam Kick recorded themselves saying that they were going to be just like Scream, except real life terms.
What the fuck, dude?
Before comparing themselves to infamous serial killers. Adam Kick then referred to the Zodiac Killer and Ted Bundy as amateurs.
You killed one person. Like,
this is before they ever killed anybody.
What the fuck? These people are clearly disturbed. How did they not show any signs of this? Were their parents not getting them help?
Right.
Were they on like meth or something?
The prosecution maintained that the teens murdered as an attempt to achieve fame in the same manner as the Columbine killers. The videos indicated that Draper and Adam Kick planned to commit multiple murders. A psychological evaluation also indicated that the teens were of sound mind when they decided and executed the murder of their friend.
Wow. So they weren't drinking anything?
They were completely straight. I mean, I don't know if that means that they weren't drinking, but they weren't insane.
Right.
They were fit to stand trial.
Yeah.
Adam Kick later tried to appeal his fixed life sentence on the grounds of the ruling was unconditional, but the courts upheld the decision, factoring that his motive for murder was solely based on his desire to achieve fame as a serial killer.
What's he want?
So,
I want to be able to do this and not go to prison.
This is probably what he didn't want. This case actually inspired a Supreme Court ruling. In 2007, the courts convicted the juveniles Draper and Adam Kick of first-degree murder and the conspiracy to commit murder. The teens received a sentence of life without the possibility of parole, and their attorneys filed an appeal with the U.S. Supreme Court, citing that there was a lack of information concerning a way a minor's brain develops.
Wow.
In the 2016 Supreme Court ruling, it was unconstitutional for a minor to receive a sentence of life without parole, no matter what crime they have committed. However, in 2017, the Idaho Supreme Court ruled to uphold Adam Kick's fixed 30-year conviction in both teen sentences. Draper and Adam Kick are in the Idaho State Correctional Institution still today. Basically, Cassie Joe, though, everybody just described her as like a role model teenager.
Yeah.
She was.
Well, it's always those ones, right? It's never like
She really liked to listen to music. She liked to draw. She was just, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
She it just sucks that that happened to her. And, like, fuck those dudes. I'm sorry, but if you can't watch a scary movie and, like, well, understand.
It's one thing, like, none of it's right. None of it should have happened. But it's one thing, like, if you kill, like, some random person, but, like, abusing someone's trust and, like, hanging out with them.
Oh,
and
right.
Knowing them and knowing about them. Like
that, it'll be easy to get somebody I know. They'll just let me right in.
That's way sicker to me. You know what I mean?
Way like, worse.
You actually knew this person.
And then to film yourselves immediately after, being like, I fucking killed her, bro. Like, I watched the life go out of her.
What about the boyfriend? I missed that part.
He had left because he couldn't spend the night with her. And I mean, they were in high school. Most kids can't spend the night with each other in that situation. Okay. Wow. So he had to go home, and she was house sitting. So they waited on her boyfriend to leave.
What the fuck, Jesus! All right, well, that's pretty dark. And Scream. I mean, Scream kind of has a comedy element to it.
I think that's why I like it a lot.
Terrifying, and that's probably good because honestly, like. The subject matter really is, if you think about it, like, legitimately, like, horrific.
Right. It really... So, I mean, they killed her mom and everything, right? Doesn't that all come out?
Yeah, yeah. For sure. All right, so let's move on to some more.
Yeah. Tell me what you got.
All right, so this one I never really heard of, but the truth behind the Bloody Corpsewood Murders...
Is this just a true story? Do you know of any movies it's based off of?
I don't know if this one is based off of any movies specifically, but it's more or less just a terrifying, you know...
I'm here for
crazy
it.
...crazy story.
Love it. All right.
All right. So the story of Satanism, sex parties, and slaughter.
Hell yeah, brother.
He and his lover took all their possessions and 12,000 doses of LSD... to go live in the Satanist sex castle of Corpsewood Manor.
First of all, Corpsewood. Second of all, 12,000 doses of LSD.
Well, their story ended in bloodbath.
Oh, God.
Dr. Charles Scudder came from a wealthy family and worked as a professor of pharmacology at Chicago's Loyola University. A good job by his own definition. Described by those who knew him as brilliant, polished, and soft-spoken. But confident. Scudder eventually grew fed up with city life and in 1976 left the luxury of his Chicago mansion in pursuit of a simpler life. As he put it, Scudder longed for an escape from taxes, light bills, gas bills, water bills, heating bills, and the helpless feeling that resulted from watching my old neighborhood disintegrate into an urban ghetto.
Well, I can't relate with that, but I can relate with being tired of paying them damn bills.
Yeah, I didn't know you could just run away from your bills.
Hell yeah. Well, let's get on. As Michael Scott said, I'm running away from my problems, and it feels good.
So the 50-year-old chose an isolated spot in the North Georgian woods to begin his new life. After leaving behind most of his worldly possessions, he headed for the south with his lover, Joe Odom.
We're going to the country.
Gonna pick some pieces. They constructed a new residence by hand in the depths of the forest. As Scudder said, within 2 short years, we were living in the elegant mini castle. They called it Corpsewood Manor, named for the haunting bare autumn trees that dotted the area.
Did they call it a mini castle?
Yeah, it's a mini castle.
All right, cute. Weird name.
Welcome to our mini castle. To complete their mini castle, the two added on a 3-story chicken house. The first floor was for the poultry and food storage. The second for canned goods and the couple's pornography collection.
Oh.
And the third for their pink room, also known as their pleasure chamber.
Oh my.
But Scudder's gay relationship was far from the only secret he had been keeping, for he also was an official member of the Church of Satan.
Hell, Satan.
Indeed, there was much more to the soft-spoken, secretly Satanist Dr. than meet the eye.
I love the secret chicken house. And in next door to your mini castle.
Yeah, next door is the secret cock house. Even at Loyola, Scudder's work was not that of the typical academic. For one, he performed government-funded experiments with mind-altering drugs like LSD. Meanwhile, he dyed his hair purple and kept a pet monkey.
It's Josh's running theory that if you dye your hair purple, you're mentally going through it.
Or any color for that matter. Well, any crazy non-hair color. Sorry.
Hot take.
And when he left Loyola for Corpswood Manor, he took a few souvenirs with him, including two human skulls and about 12,000 doses of LSD.
Hell yeah.
Now, souvenirs in hand, Scudder was free to express his Satanism within the confines of Corpswood Manor. This forest sanctuary was guarded by two mastiffs, Beelzebub and Arsenith. One named for a demon, the other after an H.P. Lovecraft character. Local legend adds that the pair also summoned a real demon to assist the dogs in guarding the house. Fittingly, Scudder and Odom also decorated Corpswood Manor with various gothic paraphernalia, including the skulls that Scudder had swiped and a pink gargoyle he had brought from his old mansion. Scudder himself thought of Corpswood Manor as more like a mausoleum, a tomb requiring care, cleaning, and endlessly costly repairs. Scudder also fashioned a stained glass window adorned with the prophet known as Baphomet, an important figure in the Church of Satan. And while Scudder took his Satanism seriously, he didn't worship Satan. Instead, he was a staunch atheist who chose to celebrate the base, worldly pleasures that he and the other church members felt were denied them by the other Abrahamic religions.
Acid. Group sex.
Yeah, I gotta have acid butt sex. It's funny. And celebrate such pleasures as they did, Scudder and Odom liked to invite guests over for wild sex parties in the pink room.
That third floor.
This room was filled with mattresses, candles, whips, and chains, and even a logbook listing guests' sexual
desires. Do you, like, desires. Tally your orgasm? Oh.
Tally my... That, jot me down for a third! While these acts were reportedly consensual, the pink room parties are the reason that the all... are the reason that on the night of December 12th, 1982, Corpswood Manor turned into a bloody murder scene. With Scudder and Odor encouraging all their guests to indulge their every whim in a haze of sex and drugs...
But you gotta write it down first.
Things were bound to implode, though perhaps no one predicted just how bloody this would all end. Among the locals that Scudder and Odom invited into their home for parties and sexual adventures were 17-year-old Kenneth Avery Brock and his roommate, 30-year-old Samuel Tony West.
Wow, 30 and 17, living together.
Yeah. Information is scarce and reports vary, but at least according to Amy Petula's The Corpswood Manor Murders in North Georgia, that's her book, Brock had several sexual encounters with Scudder at Corpswood. And eventually Brock brought Wes there for more of the same. Or at least the free booze and drugs.
Yeah, I mean, for the free acid, would you go?
Yeah, if I gotta do anything, I guess. I mean, what we did.
Well, first you have to write your name down in the book and write what you're into sexually.
Oh, not butt stuff. However, West not only strongly objected to any kind of sexual activity, but also convinced Brock that he had been taken advantage of by Scudder. Again, whether Brock had actually been taken advantage remains unclear. Nevertheless, Brock and West decided to return to Corpswood to rob Scudder and Odom. Brock and West, with two teenagers named Joey Wells and Teresa Hudgens, along for the ride, headed to Corkswood Manor on December 12, 1982, with guns in tow. However, things didn't start off violently. Initially, the four guests acted as if they were just there to hang out and accepted Scudder's offer of homemade wine as well as a potent huffing mixture or varnish, paint thinner, and other chemicals. So they're huffing paint too? Jesus
Christ. What a horrible idea that was.
At some point during the drug-fueled haze, Brock got down to business, retrieving a rifle from the car and promptly shooting Odom and the two dogs. Then Brock and Wes did all they could to force Scudder to give up whatever money he had. What Brock and Wes hadn't realized was that there were no riches at the house of any kind. And when they did eventually accept the fact, they shot Scudder 5 times in the head. They took what little valuables were lying around and fled the scene. They fled all the way to Mississippi, where they killed a man named Kirby Phelps as part of a robbery gone wrong on December 15th of that year.
Damn.
Afterwards, perhaps feeling remorseful, Brock returned to Georgia and turned himself in to police on December 20th. Wes did the same in Chattanooga, Tennessee on the 25th. Eventually, Wes was found guilty of 2 counts of murder and sentenced to death, while Brock pleaded guilty and received 3 consecutive life terms. With that came the end of the strange and bloody story of the Corpsewood murders.
I've never heard of that before. That's really crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. Like, it kind of reminds me a little bit of that, the Pazuzu story. Devil Next Door. I don't know if anyone's seen that documentary, but the Devil Next Door, the first season.
It's on Vice. It's so good.
Yeah, that's really good. But it reminds me, just that, the Satanism and drugs and fuel and these people feeling like this. But these were people outside. I was expecting the guy that was the Satanist to be, you know, killing people coming over, but they decided to come back and kill them.
Right.
That kind of took a turn that I wasn't expecting.
For sure. That was a good one.
As always, true life seems to be scarier than fiction.
Well, my story is also not necessarily based on a movie, but another crazy true story that has to do with drugs.
All right.
And murder.
Drugs and murder.
Yeah, basically,
hand in hand.
College student fatally stabs roommate after doing cocaine with the devil.
Hell yeah, brother.
How could you not be into it after that?
I'm doing cocaine with the devil.
Louisa Cutting was on Xanax, Adderall, cocaine, alcohol, mushrooms, and marijuana when she butchered her best friend.
She literally was like, just give me anything that you
can. Can we just, break that down for a minute? She was on Xanax.
So she's probably...
That's a downer.
Yeah, sleep. No, it's a barbiturate.
Then Adderall.
Which is an
upper. Cocaine.
Which is also upper.
Alcohol. Downer. Mushroom. Psychedelic.
Psychedelic.
And marijuana. I think that technically that's a downer.
Yeah,
but also a bit of a psychedelic.
Kind of, yeah.
So it's like, that's a wild mix. We can't blame this on the weed.
Fuck that.
Oh, no, that's just a... And she could, let's just be honest, weed stays in your system for way too long.
Well, no, I think she admittedly said that they started the night out smoking
weed. Okay.
But
well, let's get into it.
That's like starting the night out with a beer. Oh, shit. I can't believe that's what led you to stab someone to death.
Louisa and Alexa Cannon weren't just compatible college roommates. They were best friends, living together in an off-campus apartment until a January night of drugs and alcohol ended with doing cocaine with the devil and murder.
Wow. I'm doing cocaine with the devil!
21-year-old Cutting, a Radford University student, pled guilty to second-degree murder and has since been sentenced to a 20-year sentence in prison. Police were called to her residence at 7:45 a.m. Upon arrival, the police heard a woman making references to a knife, and they were met at the door by a woman covered in blood.
What does that mean, though? Making references to a
knife? I know, but she was saying, it was this damn knife!
I got a knife!
It was the knife! The female turned around and placed her hands on her back and stated, "Arrest me."
Jesus.
When the officer asked the blood-drenched woman what happened, she said, "I killed her."
Case closed. There we go.
The police entered the apartment and they saw a woman on the floor with multiple stab wounds and a butcher knife stuck in her mouth.
Oh my God.
According to the Roanoke Times, Cutting told the police that she was doing cocaine with the devil, but the cocaine wasn't the only drug she was on in the day preceding her crime.
Sounds like a good 80s song.
She told police that she had done mushrooms, Adderall, Xanax, marijuana, alcohol, and tobacco as well.
Tobacco?
Yeah, I know.
The tobacco that got her.
Yeah. That tobacco is what fucked it all up. She was having a good ass night until she smoked that cigarette.
Well, I'm thinking the mixture of mushrooms, Adderall, and Xanax. You're going, flipping through dimensions at that point.
Right.
Depending on how much mushrooms she took, I guess.
On the morning of her murder, a neighbor said that he heard her screaming and arguing, so he called emergency services. The attorney, Chris Rehack, explained that Cannon died of multiple sharp force injuries, and she was stabbed more than 30 times.
Wow.
Cutting was questioned at the police station and confessed, although she was rambling and given a bizarre series of episodes. Here, Cutting stated that she had been doing cocaine with the devil. She also...
She had already told
I think
that
she just... I think she just keeps bringing just that up. Like,
listen.
It wasn't... I was wasn't doing me. Cocaine with the devil.
It wasn't me. It was the devil. Because we... We were doing cocaine. We were doing cocaine.
Yes.
But the devil totally did all that.
And I was also doing mushrooms, Xanax, marijuana, alcohol,
tobacco. The devil wasn't in any of that. He just wanted the cocaine.
The cocaine.
He's just here for the cocaine.
She also spoke of the apocalypse and recited the Hail Mary prayer in Spanish before she repeatedly tried to shove her entire fist into her mouth.
Hell yeah. I'm just going to eat myself now.
Personnel consequently took her to a mental health clinic where she stayed for a whole week.
Just a week?
After search warrants were filed for investigators to comb through the apartment, they found pills, grinders, several smoking devices, and a brown chalky material in the kitchen.
What? Test it.
A post on Cannon's Instagram account revealed that the two roommates had met online and were living across from one each other for 1 year before eventually moving in together. One of Cannon's photos was eerily captioned, "Love you more, Lou, and everyone pray that we don't kill each other this year."
Oh, shit.
Cutting was
prayed harder, I think.
Cutting was a Radford University junior, as well as the president of the school's Latino Student Alliance. She tearfully read a statement in court expressing her regret for killing the 20-year-old psychology major to Cannon's family. "There are no words for this tragedy, and my heart is filled with sorrow and grief. I'm so sorry." Cannon was known for her interest in art and music, and the active social media user was recognized by friends and family by bravely navigating her epilepsy.
Wow.
The attorney said that he worked with Cannon's family to construct the terms of a plea deal, which would reflect a complex balance of facts. According to the family, they focused on establishing just a sentence and removing the need for an extended trial.
So, like, if she was going to get the death penalty or something, they just wanted it.
Basically, they just were down to just give her a plea agreement to not have to go through the horror of reliving all of that in trial.
Oh, yeah.
They were like, let's just settle this. Perhaps more importantly, the agreement secured a murder conviction, avoided any appeals, and spared Alexa's family and friends from the anguish and anxiety of trial. They also considered the impact and visibility of a defense, in such as insanity, irresistible impulse, and voluntary intoxication. Basically, Cutting's defense attorney said that she had a mental illness and suffered a psychotic episode on the night of the murder.
You don't say.
There's nothing she can do but accept sorrow, except express her sincere sorrow.
Right.
So basically, they settled on a 40-year sentence, and they suspended 20 years, so that means that she only has to spend 20 of the 40 years in prison.
Right.
She can have no contact with the family of the person that was murdered, and she has to follow any mental health treatment that authorities impose on her during the term. So for the next 40 years, she has to follow any kind of mental health treatment that they give her.
Well, of course.
She will be on probation for a whole decade after her release in 2039. So at least till 2049, they're keeping tabs on that bitch.
Yeah, they probably should. I mean, I got so many questions, really.
Me too.
One, no one's bringing up the fact that she was doing cocaine with the devil.
Right.
Where's the devil?
I need to know. That's why I wish they wouldn't have done a plea and they would have gone to trial and we would have heard the details.
Yeah. They would have indicted the devil and he would have had to show
up. Would have been subpoenaed, you mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Not indicted. Yeah, anything, but.
No. I mean, he was there doing cocaine.
Yeah. Yeah, subpoena the devil. Yeah.
That story had a lot of similarities to the Corpsewood murder story, surprisingly.
Look, I was going through a rough time.
I was doing cocaine for a bit there with my friends.
Look, she just had some Peruvian white gold.
And I said, hey.
I just said, hey.
Stab your friend to death and leave the... And then your friend's talking so goddamn much. I wish that you would stab that bitch in the mouth.
Please shut her the fuck up. I'm trying to do this.
Okay, devil. Okay. I've also had mushrooms and Xanax and tobacco and alcohol and Adderall. Do you want some Adderall? You should take some Adderall. Like, do you want a party?
He's like licking his gums. Yeah.
I wish your friend would shut the fuck up.
I wish
she would
shut the fuck
up. I'll stab her in the fucking mouth.
Also, another interesting thing about her friend is that she was a psychology major. So what did she maybe say to her?
You know what I mean? Honey, I think you're having a psychotic. You're having your first schizophrenic break right now.
No, bitch! I'm doing cocaine with the devil! See, which was she hallucinating both?
Was the friend on just as many drugs as her?
Was she actually doing cocaine?
I think that was on the list.
Oh, well, damn. Yeah, surely her friend was totally on. And it was just
the same too? Drugs. Yeah, sounds like it. They were having a party. Period.
Wow.
She said, name the drug, bitch. I got you.
Yeah. Well, like we said before, like, real life is scarier than fiction.
Or real life is just out here getting wilder and wilder.
Absolutely. So these last kind of couple of stories, these would actually make good horror movies.
Right.
You know, with Corpsewood Manor doing cocaine with the devil. I mean, that was pretty good horror movies.
Right? I felt really sorry for that girl because, you know, she just thought she was moving in with her BFF.
Shout out to the devil, right?
How
crazy is that? Like, this is some crazy stories. Like,
yeah. It's just my favorite whenever, like, a horror movie is kind of based off of a real thing, you know?
Yeah.
Even if it's loosely.
Yeah, like we said, like, that's just, true life is scarier.
Yeah, it really is.
Real life is way scarier than fiction. Even though fiction is, you know, you can depict some terrifying creatures or monsters or scenarios, but true life just always beats it every time.
For sure. Like, that's, for me, like, monster movies and stuff are way less scary than, like, slasher stuff and things like that, because that feels so much more real.
Oh, right. Like, it's more likely to happen.
Right.
Therefore, you're scared of it, right? Well, I hope you guys enjoy that, because you know what time it is now.
Yep.
It's time to play Versus. Like always, we take one scary thing and we put it up against another scary thing. And we decide which one think is scarier.
I'm going to accidentally break the super duper secret box.
Yeah, Chris is like slamming it, making sure nothing gets out of it.
Yeah. All right.
Got to keep it sealed tight.
So, we've been having the theme this round. All right. So, you know, like, our themes this week have been horror movie slashers.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, the fictional characters, right?
So yeah. Let's see who it is this week.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. It versus Chucky.
It versus Chucky. Mm.
This is a good one.
That's a good one because both of them weren't like the most terrifying thing, right?
I don't know. It's pretty scary to me.
Well, yeah, because it, I guess you look at it as a whole, like he's a clown and like a giant alien spider thing.
So, yeah.
You know, so.
For sure. So instantly I lean it, but Chucky is a little psychopath doll. So.
So if you know the story of it, that kind of helps you too, though, because, you know, it doesn't really have any powers over you if you're not afraid of him. It's kind of like Freddy Krueger. Like, if you're not, don't believe in him, he doesn't have any powers.
Makes sense.
But if you're not afraid of, remember in the second movie, like, they were like, we're not afraid of you. And he'd, like, shrink down.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. I do remember that.
So there's that. But if you don't initially know that,
you're terrified.
You're super terrified, right?
And like, giving him more and more power.
Because I hate clowns. Like, let's just be honest. Like, I think I'm probably leaning towards it initially. But just the tiny doll of Chucky is just,
yeah.
Don't like it.
I don't like it. And just to be honest, I don't know the Chucky story all that well.
Well, basically, he is a doll that got possessed by a serial killer.
Okay, so it's like a serial killer basically living through the doll?
Yes.
In a way? So it's Annabelle, but serial killer version.
Yes. And he's like a maniac, psychopathic serial killer. He did like this seance thing and called upon the Dark Lord to grant him a, you know, new life.
Interesting. Okay, so.
It was kind of a botched thing, though. He was trying to go into like a different body. But he ended up in the doll. So there is a comical element to Chucky, right?
Right. And I liked the Chucky remake with Audrey Plaza.
All right. Yeah,
I like that.
I know. We need to watch the Chucky TV series, maybe. I've heard decent things about it.
I feel like I should just watch the original Chucky.
But see, also with Chucky, for me, like, I just feel like I can just drop kick his little ass.
Oh, yeah.
And he's not that strong. Like, how strong could he possibly be? He has the strength of, like, a 3-year-old?
No, I feel like he probably has the strength of the man who possessed him.
Yeah, but he's a doll. He doesn't actually have bones or muscles.
Yeah, but he can stab your ass. So he's got something going on.
Well, yeah, but he's got to sneak up on you, right? And how many stabs is he going to get in? He might not kill me unless he hits me, like, right in the jugular.
All
right,
well, anyway.
Then I can just flip his little ass. Drop some bows on him.
True. You're it. Right.
He's going to suck my ass in, down in the sewer.
Oh, God, right. He can do some weird
He's
shit.
Fast and, like, moves all creepy.
Ew, in the teeth.
Yeah.
Especially in the original It, those teeth scared me bad.
The scariest scene for me in the original It is when he pops up out of the shower drain.
Yes.
God, I don't like that.
I wasn't really all that into the remake of It. I mean, it's okay.
I liked the second part the best.
Yeah.
The first part, I was a little, it was okay.
I did feel like the second one was better.
The second one, for me, I was like, okay, this is much better. But, and usually it's not like that, you know?
Yeah, almost never.
AKA Halloween Ends. Ugh.
I think we're in agreement that It is the scarier of the two.
It's the scarier. Clown, spiders.
Yeah.
Just the scenario of it.
Sewers, drains.
Then anyway, it comes every like 33 years or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And both the guys that played it are really good actors. Bill Skarsgård and Tim Curry.
Both
I love
great.
Tim Curry.
Is Bill Skarsgård related to Eric Northman?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they're brothers. They have another brother too.
Many. There's a lot of children in that
too.
Family.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, we're in agreement. It is scarier.
There you go.
For sure.
Yeah. But as always, we'd love to hear what you think.
Oh, yeah.
And you can hit us up at hauntedhazepodcast@gmail.com.
Yep. And you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at hauntedhazepodcast.
Yes, we love hearing from you guys. Please shout out to us. And again, shout out to Wicked Ways Haunted House in Memphis. We're looking forward to tonight.
Yeah, we're so excited. And then before we leave, we have one final terrifying question.
One final terrifying question.
All right. So in The Hills Have Eyes 2006, what Californian city is the Carter family traveling to?
Oh, damn. Is it San Diego?
Yep.
Damn, okay. I was thinking it was going to be like... one of those San cities, right? Like,
like San Francisco.
Well, no, I was thinking more, yeah, like San Francisco or Santa Fe or Santa Fe, but San Jose.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, it was San Diego, so good. I don't think you've gotten one wrong. Well,
that's how I keep escaping. It's kind of like I'm getting out alive, right? As long as I can answer the question, I get out alive.
Oh, well, if that's the case, I'll pick easier ones. I don't want you to die because you got a question wrong. All right. Well, I'm glad you keep getting them right.
All right. Well, this was fun. We hope you guys had fun, and thank you so much for listening. Catch us next week with an all-new episode.
Yep. Peace out.
Peace out. Stay haunted.